You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next, battle over clean air and air pollution. Almost off the radar screen because of the president's war on terror is his battle over clean air. It's a war without a daily body count, but that doesn't receive a lot of attention. But every once in a while, compelling news from that battlefront pushes its way to the front pages, complete with casualty figures. Just this week, the Environmental Protection Agency told 31 governors that almost 500 counties nationwide do not comply with EPA standards for smog, one way of saying that the people who live there, close to half the population of the country, are breathing unhealthy air. This unsettling bit of news comes not long after an EPA advisory in March, warning pregnant women and young children to limit their consumption of certain kinds of fish for fear of mercury contamination. One can of white tuna fish per week. How does the mercury get into fish? Well, partly from the smokestacks of coal-burning, electric-producing power plants. The power industry has been surrounded by another controversy recently. New Source Review, part of the Clean Air Act, is at its core. What's that all about? When the Clean Air Act came into effect in the 1970s, the EPA wanted power companies to minimize pollution from their coal-burning power plants. And instead of requiring all the power plants to immediately upgrade to more efficient and less polluting equipment, it decided to let the changes take place gradually, figuring that these old plants would soon need major overhauls. The EPA said, whenever you make a major change to the equipment, you must install the cleaner technology, the strategy being that over the years, these older, dirtier plants would be replaced by newer plants, equipped with the latest in high-tech pollution control devices like scrubbers, and so the nation's air pollution levels would drop. But now a major battle between environmentalists, energy producers, the White House, and the states themselves is underway over these rules. The Bush administration has revised them, and critics are charging that the administration is out to gut the spirit, if not the letter, of the Clean Air Act. A dozen states are suing the EPA, and a federal judge has ruled that the new rules won't go into effect until those suits are settled. So we're going to debate the issue this hour, hopefully clarify it. And here to do that are two people who have been in the thick of things. Ed Yawn is the Director of Governmental Relations at Edison Electric Institute, the leading advocacy group of the electric utility industry. He joins us from Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ira.
You're welcome. Eric Schaefer was the director of the Office of Regulatory Enforcement at the EPA from 1997 to 2002. He is currently the director of the Environmental Integrity Project in Washington. He joins us today by a phone from Austin, Texas. Welcome to the program, Mr. Schaefer.
Thank you, Ira.
And if you'd like to get in on the conversation, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Let's see if we can back up a little bit and get some history here. Eric Schaefer, what kind of emissions are we talking about under the Clean Air Act?
Well, let's focus on power plants. Power plants are our single biggest polluter today, at least if we're talking about stationary sources outside the mobile source arena. They're responsible for over a third of airborne mercury emissions. You mentioned the health damage from that earlier. 60% of sulfur dioxide emissions, a quarter of nitrogen oxide emissions, which form smog. And we've learned a lot more about the health effects from these pollutants than we knew 10 or 15 years ago. The government's now concluded that sulfur dioxide and nitrogen oxide form fine particle pollution that attacks your lungs. It keeps them from absorbing oxygen. You talked about the body count. The government estimates that fine particle pollution from power plants causes hundreds of thousands of asthma attacks a year, and heart disease and lung cancer that cuts more than 20,000 lives short every year. So that is quite a body count if that's what we're looking for. It's a pretty grim story. That's the nature of the problem, and what to do about it, I think, is the debate.
Ed Yawn, would you agree basically with these statistics?
Well, as to the issue of the affected population, I think that there's still a good bit of scientific debate going on in different studies showing different things. But I think the thing, let me step back for a moment and try to put some of this in context. One of the facts I think your listeners need to know is that the electric power sector has reduced its emissions by about 40% from 1980 up to date. We've got another major, about 1 million ton reduction in NOx that will occur in 2004 under a NOx SIP call. We're also going to be subjected to an additional, under the Interstate Air Transport rule, an additional approximately two-thirds additional reductions in our emissions during the course of that rule. And so steps are being taken that we think are very significant.
Eric Schaefer?
The health studies that I was citing come from the government, so while there may be debate, I think the consensus is that power plant pollution drives a lot of fine particle pollution and does cause thousands of premature deaths a year. 40% sounds good as far as reducing emissions, but that's over about a 24-year period. That comes out to less than 2% a year. If you really believe that we have more than 20,000 lives cut short every year, then cutting emissions by less than 2% a year is moving too slowly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Ira, if I might just a quick comment. Do respect that the studies that you're citing are statistical, epidemiological kind of studies, and I'm not trying to invalidate them, but I think that you simply need to be aware that there are various studies showing different
things. I understand. These are studies. I understand the industry's views. These are studies the Bush administration cites. So I'm talking about the Bush administration.
Let me move on a little bit. Are we talking then about the biggest polluting kinds of plants then to still be the older ones, the ones that were originally cited back in the days of the original Clean Air Act?
Well, I certainly think so. Mm-hmm. Most of the pollution that we're talking about comes from coal-fired plants built before 1977. That still don't have the pollution controls that we've required out of new plants for the past 30 years.
Now, they were supposed to, as I mentioned in the beginning, weren't they supposed to gradually either go out of commission, the thinking was, or as they were being upgraded to come on with new, more efficient pollution control devices?
Well, that was the government's position until the last election. And, in fact, EPA had brought enforcement cases against a handful of the biggest companies, which are responsible for the lion's share of pollution. And we had alleged that these companies had violated the laws you're talking about. In other words, they had made significant physical changes to these plants that increased pollution substantially in violation of the law. And those cases have been pretty seriously damaged by the Bush administration because the administration has effectively unwritten or eliminated the law that we were trying to enforce.
Ira, can I put some context for the listener on this? The 1990 Clean Air Act amendments made a very fundamental change in the way that emissions from power plants were going to be reduced. Under Title IV of the Clean Air Act, they shifted from a command specifying a particular type of technology over to a cap and trade kind of a program. That program has been very successful. I've cited some statistics.
Cap and trade means you could trade the credits with other regions of the
country. Exactly. But the point is that you cap your emissions. And so as time has gone on, the things like new source review have become less and less relevant because the caps are coming down and down and down, and they're going to be coming down even further in 2004 and through 2015. Mm-hmm. So people need to understand that we're moving away from that technology control kind of an approach.
Moving, if I could get equal time, moving very slowly, moving to reduce emissions by a rate that's about 2% a year. And in terms of that acid rain control program Ed is talking about, that is about played out. We are going to finish getting the reductions from that program over the last several years. We can expect to see a decline in sulfur dioxide emissions over the next 7 or 8 years of another 7 or 8%, and then the decline stopped. The problem that we face is we didn't know about fine particle pollution in 1990. That wasn't on the radar when Congress passed this law. This law was set up to deal with an acid lake problem primarily in the Northeast. So maybe at the time it made sense. If you really think the government is right and the Health Effects Institute is right and the Harvard School of Public Health is right And we're looking at more than 20,000 premature deaths a year. 2% reduction in emissions every year, that's way too slow. The second point I really need to squeeze in is, sure, we had an acid rain program come online in 1990. It's done some good things. It did not eliminate new source review. That law remained on the books. We had two laws. The industry chose to comply with one. This is not a buffet where you can go up to the table and just pick the dish you'd like to eat. The idea is you've got two laws to comply with. You're responsible for both of them.
You brought up two things twice, Eric. You said first, you talked about what's called new source review.
Right.
And you said this administration is really doing something that no one has done before about clean air. Let me get you to lay that out, and I'm going to let Ed comment
okay.
on it.
Sure. What the administration's done, the old law was, make a physical change in a plant that increases pollution, you've got to get a permit, you've got to put on up-to-date pollution controls. That law was subject to very narrow exceptions, but generally that was the law of the land, and that's what the government was trying to enforce. At the industry's request, and I know Edison Electric is happy with this result, you've got a situation now where you can take a single project. In that project, you can replace up to 20% of the plant at a time. So for a utility, that means spending $200 million on a big replacement project. And the government will classify that as exempt, as, quote, routine repair that's exempt from permitting, even if you increase pollution by thousands of tons. I think the changes were so outrageous that that's why the D.C. Circuit put that change on hold, basically put that rule on ice until it can hear the lawsuits that the states have brought.
Ira, the one of the things that needs to be clarified, I think, is that the rule now Eric was referring to the new source review rule. That rule also prohibits companies from making changes regardless of the cost of those changes that would increase the rate of emissions or the amount of fuel that they could use to make electricity. So there are safeguards that are built into that rule. And the rule was sought by a lot of people. I mean, it's not just the electric utility industry. There is a widespread support for a change to the rule. But one of the part of the history that needs to be understood, too, is that for about two decades, the power companies were able to make what we call routine maintenance and replacement of something like a turbine blade, which wears out. And I'll draw the analogy quickly. It's like your car, or my car, or your truck. If you change the spark plugs and you change the oil and you change the air filter, that improves the efficiency of the car. You ought not to have to replace the entire engine because you have improved the efficiency of the operation. And that is what we're arguing, is that 20-year period in which we were operating with EPA consent. And then EPA changed the rules on us in the 1990s, when Eric was there, the rules were changed. And that's where the debate is. There's a difference of opinion, and that is being litigated. It's in the courts. There has been a decision just this week in the Duke Power case in favor of Duke Power. There was another case that went against the power company. So it's going to be debated for some time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it is going to be out there. In debate, but those matters are before the court.
And Eric, I'll give you a chance. Let me just jump in and remind everybody that I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, as to EPA changing the rules, I mean, that's the industry's position. In the early 1990s, this is under George Bush Sr., EPA warned the industry that even after these new acid rain laws came into play, new source reviews still applied. And that any exceptions from the general requirement that you had to get a permit had to be narrowly read. That was the rule laid down in the early 1990s. So I don't see that there's been a change at all. That's what the lawyers are arguing. Now, in the Duke Power case, the government, was unable to put this into evidence ultimately, but the government discovered and had presented in its arguments information showing that the company's lawyers knew the risks they were taking. They basically rolled the dice with the law. They decided EPA is never going to enforce it, and if they do enforce it, we'll just try to argue our way around it. Then when they got nailed, and these cases started going to court, they went to the Bush administration and got the law changed.
Mm-hmm. Let me take your car analogy a little bit and ask you a question about that.
Please do.
You have a turbine or a turbine engine in your plant. Let's say you want to build a new power plant, but you know if you do that, you're going to be spending the money under the law, which says you have to upgrade the system. But you have a leeway for if making small repairs. What's to prevent you from fixing that new turbine blade and saying, I've made a repair, coming back the next week, fixing another new turbine blade, making that repair, and over a period of months or years, changing every single part in that plant.
I understand your question.
You know, every single part in the plant and basically building a whole new plant without now having to comply with the new law.
I appreciate the question. The provision and the safeguard that I tried to describe, maybe not very clearly, the rule prohibits companies from doing just exactly what you're describing if it's going to cause an increase in the rate of emissions or the amount of fuel that can be used to make electricity at the plant. There is a safeguard built in there.
Yeah, let me cut through that if I can. I mean, the environment doesn't necessarily care about the, quote, rate of emissions, and neither do our lungs. What we care about is the pollution increasing from this plant or not? If you make a change, like a turbine blade replacement, that doesn't increase pollution, you're fine. You're fine. You have nothing to do under the law. You're home free. If you make those physical changes and you do increase the amount of pollution, which affects what we breathe, then you are required to come in and get a permit. So saying that, you know, the rate of emissions, it won't increase and so on, it doesn't matter if you're actually increasing the total loading. The second thing is, you mentioned earlier, these plants were assumed to be eventually retired. A lot of these plants are built, we've got some built in the late 40s now. They're very, very old. The idea was they would eventually be phased out and replaced with cleaner plants. If you can keep rebuilding that plant and never have to get a new source review permit, you're going to be running it without good pollution controls, and you're going to have an advantage over cleaner technologies, and that just seems really unfair.
Simply would observe, you know, that Eric is right in that people's reaction to these emissions don't depend on a nuance of the new source review rule, and that's why I tried to stress that emissions have been down by 40% while electricity demand has been increasing. There's been over 100% increase in electricity demand in the last 30 years, so that. That is the central point to us, is that emissions are coming down. They're going to come down further in 2004 and further under these various rules, and that those caps are going to be so low and so tight that I think new source review will become obsolete in a few years, but for brand new plants.
All right, we'll come back and debate more with Ed Yawn and Eric Schaefer about new source review and other air pollution issues. Take your call. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about air pollution and what the consequences of power plants and whether they're being cleaned up at what rate. With my guests, Ed Yawn, Director of Governmental Relations at Edison Electric Institute, Eric Schaefer, Director of Office of Regulatory Enforcement at the Environmental Protection Agency from 1997 to 2002, currently Director of the Environmental Integrity Project in Washington, D.C. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can get some phone calls in here from the time we have left. Robert in San Antonio. Hi, Robert.
Yes, hi. I called to essentially question. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
To essentially question the sincerity of the environmental movement in general and your guest in particular. The fact that he claims on some speculative statistical studies that 20,000 deaths accrue from coal-fired furnaces or coal-fired is really kind of a nonsense, because, look, we have 50,000 deaths a year from automobiles. The biggest cause of deaths from all diseases is smoking. I don't hear him get, if he's so interested in the welfare of the citizenry, I don't hear him complaining about the Congress subsidizing the growing of tobacco.
Wait, let me get a reaction.
Yeah, I'm happy to complain about that. Would you like me to complain about the tobacco industry? I can bend your ear on that. I work on environmental issues. This, quote, speculative statistics I'm talking about, they come from the government. So your issue is with EPA, with the Health Effects Institute, and with the Harvard School of Public Health, not with the environmental community. You can choose not to believe them, but they are there.
Well, I think the government environmentalists have a cabal to just gain political control.
I know it's all a big conspiracy. I understand.
Good.
Ira, can I just make a quick comment? Our point of view here is that we are all concerned about air quality. I think everybody in the United States is concerned. The question is, how do you get there and at what rate and over what time period and factors like that? And we think we're doing a reasonable job in our industry.
Well, okay, let me say, take that at face value. Then why would the American Lung Association call it, quote, the most harmful and unlawful air pollution initiative ever taken by the federal government? What do they have to gain by any of this?
Well, I guess they create some publicity for themselves.
But they're a bunch
I don't
of,
know.
They're doctors, yeah. You know. I mean, if they, yeah. They're not politicking on this. I mean, it's you know, and this gentleman thinks it's all a conspiracy. There are people, observers on the outside saying these things.
This is coming from the medical community. It, next time have one of them on the show and. Maybe that's a better way to make the point.
Where are the states? I noticed, because we're here in the Northeast, and we hear a lot about states and whatever. And there are a lot of them, over a dozen now, that they're suing the federal government, saying that these pollution laws are actually going around and bypassing the Clean Air Act.
I might jump in.
Yes.
I know there are some. Eric will tell you about those that are doing that. There are also 14 attorney generals from throughout the United States that's supporting the new source review rules and reforms.
Eric?
Yeah, maybe so. From Western states and from states that are a little more conservative,
mm-hmm.
There's some partisan politics going on, no question. I can tell you the General Accounting Office just finished a study asking the professionals in states, these are the ones who run the air programs, not the politicians, what they thought about these changes and whether they'd increase emissions. And the GAO survey found the states strongly oppose them as a group. They feel these changes would drive emissions up and make it harder to meet the kind of attainment standards meet the clean air health goals that the administrator of EPA has been talking about this week.
Yeah, there were those figures issued by the EPA about the ozone emissions. We've had people coming on the program. We've read articles where you hear some states saying, if I turned off every pilot light in the state, stopped every car, turned off every power switch, we would still be out of compliance with some of the Clean Air Act because we have stuff blowing into our state from someplace else.
You can't get compliance under the Clean Air Act without cleaning power plants up. And I think Ed has, fairly said it's a debate over how we're going to do it and how fast we're going to get there. I think, our position generally from the public interest community, and I think most people in government below the political level, is that you can lick this problem inside 10 years. These controls are affordable. They're long overdue. The industry for years and years has always sort of inflated the cost of compliance. It always turns out to be a lot less than what they say, so we can do it. I think the Bush administration's position is, let's take until, 2025 or 2030. They're putting controls far out into the future. They have us kind of chasing rainbows. It's kind of like we're going to get to this problem about the same time we have a manned space station on Mars, or we've finished fixing the federal deficit.
Well, they've got a definite timetable, and you may not agree with the timetable. Just in real quick response to Robert's question and American Lung. I didn't in any way didn't mean to disparage American Lung. They're very sincere about what they're saying, but there are a lot of studies out there that are dealing, for example, with a fine particulate issue. That show that perhaps it is not power plant pollution, but other effects or other particles causing this effect. I'm not saying that those are necessarily right. I'm saying that they are out there that need to be understood as we move forward, because we don't know if it's the size or the chemical composition.
Can you identify one of those studies and tell us if it's
right? I'd be glad to
peer reviewed.
Be glad to. It is a relatively new study, the one that, among others that I'm thinking about, that was done by the Electric Power Research Institute and Emory University, where they analyzed over 4 million hospital visits in Atlanta.
Right.
And showed no health impacts from nitrates or sulfates. It's a beginning. Again, I'm not saying it is the be-all and end-all. It is, though, a beginning and a different study and a different point of view.
Mm-hmm. What about these new rules for mercury emissions? Now, that's a whole different animal, mercury, is it not? Or are you willing to say that it's the same toxicity as the nitrous oxides and sulfur and whatever? Eric?
I'm certainly not. I would say it's at least as bad, probably worse. First, just quickly to concede some good news, we have made progress. We're now fighting over how much faster we need to go in the case of sulfur dioxide and nitrogen oxide. For mercury, we've not made very much progress. We're starting a little bit more from ground zero. Under existing law, with respect to the air toxic standards for mercury, the government had to drop air emission control requirements on the industry over the next 3 years. And using available technologies like carbon absorption, you were looking at something in the range of a 70-75% reduction over the next 3 years. The government's proposal, which would allow the industry to buy and sell mercury emission rights, like we were talking about pork belly futures or something, would have those emission levels go down by about 70% over something like a 25-year period. So we're taking a neurotoxin with fish contaminant advisories in 49 states and the power industry being the biggest source of airborne mercury, and we're talking about 25 years to lick the problem, and the government has never showed that it's not affordable to do it much sooner. The most disturbing part of how these rules are put together is that entire sections of the mercury rule were lifted from a memo written by a law firm representing one of the industry associations. That's not the way the government should be making its decisions.
Ira, just a couple of points on mercury, and again, I'll try to do this quickly. First of all, 70%, the pathway for mercury to humans is by it being deposited into the waters of the United States and people then eating the fish that have uptaked and bioaccumulated the mercury. Approximately 70% of all the mercury that's deposited in the U.S. waters comes from outside the United States. Approximately 50% of mercury is from natural sources, naturally occurring volcanoes in the soil and in other places. Having said that, we are very comfortable with a 70% reduction in mercury. We are working.
Does it have to take that long? Is it going to bankrupt the industry to take the mercury out of the air?
We don't have the technology today to do that, Ira. That's one of the big issues. There will be some mercury reduction as a result of the SO2 scrubbing and the NOx, as we call it, the co-benefits that will occur from reducing SO2 and reducing NOx. And we are looking at technologies. Eric referred to one that seems to hold some promise, but it may not be the final answer, which is activated carbon injection and perhaps what we call fabric filters or bag houses. But we don't know yet. Mm-hmm. We do not have the technology there that will get us there. And
I got to break in again just please. For a second. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. All right, Eric, you were trying to jump in?
Yeah, my concern is we've heard this before. When new regulations roll around and new health risks are identified, the industry is never ready. It's always going to take a long time, and it's always going to cost a whole lot of money. They said that about the acid rain law that Ed seems to like now. Back when that law was put into place, the industry came out with the cost of control estimates, how much they thought it was going to cost to clean up. And they turned out to be wildly inflated. So I just don't have a lot of confidence.
We were pleased for our customers' sake that it was lower than what we had anticipated.
How much lower?
It was probably 50% lower. I'm trying to remember the numbers.
A half of what you thought it would be.
Half of what we thought it would be. But we did have the technology for SO2 removal, which are scrubbers, at that point in time. The debate was over NOx reduction, low NOx burners, selective catalytic reduction, and that kind of thing. That's where more of the technology debate occurred. But we were able to achieve through trading and through lower rail cost and lower coal cost a lower cost of compliance with Title IV. So in any case, we're on board with a 70% mercury reduction. We're working with EPA to try to figure out the right way to go. We think trading will lower our cost of compliance, and it's going to be done. I mean, that's
it. It always costs less to comply if it takes 25 years to clean up instead of 3. So I'm not surprised you think it'll cost less, because you've got such a long.
But he says the technology is not there to do it. Is it there?
I do think it's there. For one thing, I think it's there for scrubbing. Here's what the administration did. You get a lot of what they call co-benefit by scrubbing power plants. You can remove a lot of mercury, especially from eastern coals. If that's the only thing that we've got right now, if that's the industry's position, and I don't agree with it, but let's take it for granted that all we can do in the short term is scrubbing, we should do as much scrubbing as possible. We should get these plants scrubbed, because cleaning up sulfur dioxide and other problems. That's not what the administration did here. They basically said, all we can do is scrubbing. Let's see, how much scrubbing should we do? Well, what did we ask the Hill for? The schedule over here, we'll just stick with that schedule. So it's just not a very honest accounting of what is possible with pollution control.
Well, I'll reiterate, we are going to have significant scrubbing under the Interstate Air Quality Rule and under the eastern U.S. NOx
CIPCOL. So, Ed, can I ask you a question? Are you not going to sue the government over that rule? You support?
We are in the process, just like you are, of looking at the rule and determining how it ought to be finally structured, and I have no idea.
I think that's another way of saying we have no idea what that rule will do, because it's not really a rule. It's another proposal that just happens to be set up to take effect after the election. So we don't know what the outcome will be. We don't know whether the utility industry will do what it's done with most other major rules under the Clean Air Act, which is sue the government to try to stop implementation. We're really talking about kind of a rainbow thing right now. The Interstate Air Quality Rule doesn't exist.
I think we're looking also for a supplemental rule on the Interstate Air Quality in May. So I think we need to look at those things and, you know, evaluate them. But we fully anticipate that it is going to be approximately a two-thirds reduction.
All right. We've got to break it off right there. We'll revisit the issue as the months roll on, as this issue stays hot. I'd like to thank both my guests, Eric Schaefer, former director of the Office of Regulatory Enforcement at the EPA and director of the Environmental Integrity Project in Washington, Ed Yawn, director of governmental relations at Edison Electric Institute in Washington. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining
us. Thank you, Ira.
You're welcome.
You, bye-bye.
This program is produced by Annette Heist, Eric Altman, and senior producer Karen Vergoth. Charles Berquist is our director and web producer, and we had help today from Ryan Roberts in Stamford, California. If you'd like to surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, you can get Science Friday's Kids Connection there, curricula free. We make for everybody to take to their classrooms with them. Also, you can download Science Friday in your audible.com player. And also, you can check out all the links we have put up there for Science Friday in case you missed them this hour. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.